Hello, welcome to the Farm Commons podcast, where we make farm law accessible and actionable for sustainable farmers and ranchers, as well as their networks of support. In each episode, we explore real legal issues faced on farms every day, providing key knowledge and tangible solutions to help you grow a thriving agricultural business. From managing liability to navigating tough conversations with landowners and neighbors, we've got your back. Let's get started. Hey, hi, hello. Welcome back to the Farm Commons podcast. It's Eva here, and I'm hanging out with Chloe, our staff attorney. Today, we're continuing our three-part mini-series on botanical product risk management, where we address key legal issues for all you producers out there who are growing herbs like yarrow, calendula, tulsi, ashwagandha, hyssop, and Spilanthes, and turning those herbs into teas, tinctures, salves, and more. I should also mention that honey, garlic, maple syrup, and mushroom farmers, y'all can fall into this category too. If you're a botanical producer, be sure to check out episode 71, Navigating Botanical Product Regulations and the Enforcement of Rules, where we explain three key areas of regulation you should be aware of when selling your products to avoid issues with the FDA. For today's episode, we're talking labels, right, Chloe?
Hi, everyone. Yes, today's episode is all about the technical aspects of the labels that go onto your teas, your capsules, your tinctures, to name a few products you might be making. Now, if you're making cosmetics, you're going to need to reference our new Farmer's Legal Guide to Botanical Products, which is linked in our show notes, to know what those requirements for cosmetic products are. The good news is that cosmetic labels are very similar to, but actually simpler than, dietary supplement labels that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, sounds good, Chloe. Labels are such a hot topic. We often get asked what should be included on product labels and what can and cannot be said. Well, I guess written, right? Because we're talking about written labels here.
Yes. It's definitely a hot topic, and it can be helpful to think about botanical product labels in terms of what should be on the label and what shouldn't be there. This leaves you room to explore what you can actually write on these tea, tincture, and salve labels, in addition to the baseline information that should always be included. Through our conversation, we aim to leave you with a sense of the boundaries so you can move forward with more labeling confidence. Since Rachel covered marketing of dietary supplements in episode 71, I'll cover what should be on your labels.
For sure. So let's use an example to help illustrate the principles here. Let's say that you and I have an herb farm, and we make a dried tea blend of rose, tulsi, chamomile, and lion's mane. Gosh, doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, it does. Pour me a cup.
Okay, I'll get right to it. But for the label, let's get into it. What should be on there? I'm thinking some of our listeners may think this is obvious. Probably the word tea and a list of the ingredient herbs, right?
Yeah, this is a great place to start. Because it's not as straightforward as labeling something as tea and being done with it. And that's because there's four potential regulatory categories for your botanical products. We've got conventional foods, a food that is actually a dietary supplement, we have cosmetics, and we have drugs. Rachel goes into the details on each of these categories in episode 71, and they're covered extensively in our written guide. But to give you a bit of context here in very simple terms, what category your product falls under depends mostly on what you say about it and how you intend it to be used. So for that lovely tea that we're imagining, let's say we've packaged it in a lined brown paper bag sold in 2-ounce increments, and that it's meant to be steeped in hot water and drunk. Now, you and I, we could sell this either as a food or a dietary supplement. If we're meaning to sell this as a food, then what should be on the label includes these list of six things. first what's called a statement of identity. Then we need to list the quantity in our package, the ingredients, like you said, an allergen warning if that's relevant to our product. We have to have the name and street address of the manufacturer or distributor. And if we're selling it as a food, we'll need the nutrition facts box on the label. On the other hand, if we wanted to make a health-related claim, then we'll need to sell this tea as a dietary supplement. And in that case, the label should also include, on top of everything I just listed for conventional foods, an FDA disclaimer and the supplement facts box instead of a nutrition facts box.
Yeah, so there are quite a few similarities between food labels and dietary supplement labels. And it looks like the main difference is between the facts on the product. You know, you said food is labeled with a nutrition facts box and dietary supplements with a supplements facts box. Are these the white and black panels or boxes on our consumables that tell us, you know, what nutrients and, you know, the stuff that you're consuming basically in a product, like botanical products?
Yes, exactly. Dietary supplements are food, but a special subcategory of food. So it makes sense that the label requirements would be similar between the two things. Now, we're going to get into what goes into that supplement facts box later. But first, I want to address what some listeners may be wondering. How do we know if this tea product needs to be labeled as a food or dietary supplement? The most important difference depends on the nature of the health-related claims on the product. There are very limited health-related claims you can make for a conventional food, and they are generally about specific nutrients in the food that have been scientifically linked to health-related outcomes. But if we marketed our tea as a dietary supplement, we could say things like the tea supports healthy sleep or provides mood support. These health-related claims are called structure function claims. And what fact box we put on the label depends on how we want to market the product.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the point that you're making is that some botanical products can be one or the other, and the label requirements change based on, you know, which one you as the business owner choose. And so because botanical products are so much more than teas, you know, there's tinctures and other products like we mentioned earlier, but also oxymels and gummies, vinegars and other products that are taken internally that are much more likely to be marketed as dietary supplements. So let's focus on how to properly label our tea as a dietary supplement.
Yeah, let's do it. The first thing to go on your packaging for a dietary supplement, this is of course after your logo and product name, is the statement of identity. This and the next few requirements I'll talk about all have to appear on what's called the principal display panel. That panel is just what the customer is going to see first. It's right on the front of the packaging. The statement of identity directly follows the name of the product, and it further clarifies what the product is. So if our tea, if we call it Dreamy Feels Tea, it should be directly, that brand name should be directly followed by the words herbal supplement. Or we could call it a dietary supplement, or we could even use the more verbose herbal dietary supplement. Now, if it were a food, if we marketed it as a food, we could only write it's an herbal tea.
Got it. That's pretty straightforward and good to know about the choice there in terms of being verbose or not. So how about the net quantity of contents? That's basically the amount of the product that's being purchased, right?
Yeah. So the consumer needs to know how much product is included in the package so that they can compare products that they might buy to one another. the law is particular about where this information goes on the box. So it also needs to go on that principal display panel right on the front. And it is required to go at the bottom one third of that panel. The quantity can be expressed as weight or numerical count, depending on the product. But if it's measured in weight, that must be reported in both metric and U.S. customary system weight. So for example, if you had a product that weighed 2.1 ounces, you would write that. And then in parentheses, you would also include that is equal to 60 grams. One issue to watch out for here with these quantity statements is what the FDA calls qualifying phrases, meaning adding adjectives or saying things like a jumbo quart or a full pound. The issue here is that that net quantity statement is included to help consumers compare products. And in reality, a pound is a pound is a pound. So saying a full pound is really just a weird psychological trick to try to make your pound sound better than other pounds. And the FDA doesn't allow that.
Gosh, the marketing tactics are so subtle. And I feel that way about almost everything at the store now, not just botanicals. When we go to the grocery store, I feel a bit weird every time I see a bag of chips with the word family size or the words family size, because my husband and I are both pretty active hobby athletes and we can totally crush a bag that size over a weekend when we're putting in the miles. So does our family of two count? I don't know.
Yeah, I can see how that would trip you up. And that's another reason for including the net quantity statement for food and dietary supplement products right there on the front of the packaging. Your chips may say, quote unquote, family size, and it's also going to tell you how much is literally in the bag so you can decide how you consume that volume. But I'm not a nutritionist, so let's stick to the law. Let's turn our tea product packaging, that bag where we have it packaged, over to the side or to the back where we find a new panel. That one is called the information panel. This information panel is going to typically be to the right of and adjacent to the principal display panel. Now, that's usually the case if the packaging is a bottle or a box with three or four panels per on the entire label. But if you have a two-panel label like our bag, then this information panel can just go on the back. Wherever the information panel ends up, this is where we're going to find that supplement facts box. Now, it is true that not all dietary supplements have to have a supplement facts box. Some won't. Some small and low volume businesses are exempt from needing this box, as are botanical producers that are only selling wholesale. To get the exact thresholds for the small and low volume businesses, you're going to have to read our Farmer's Legal Guide to Botanical Products. However, if you make any structure function claims or any health-related claims, then those exemptions are off the table. In that case, you have to have a supplement facts box.
Okay, so for our Dreamy Feels tea, I'm imagining the supplement facts box on the back of the package. What should go in there?
Well, the dietary ingredients of our tea need to go into that supplement facts box, listing out each botanical ingredient and the measure of those ingredients. So our rose, tulsi, chamomile, and lion's mane all need to be listed there with the weight of each. And we're going to start with the most prevalent ingredient first. Now, any non-botanical ingredients are actually going to be listed just below the supplement facts box, and they'll be called quote-unquote other ingredients. So this is where, if it's relevant to your product, you would list things like the gelatin in the capsule or any fillers in your product. The supplement facts box also needs to include the serving size and the servings per container. The fun thing about this box is that there are a lot of very particular rules as to how to structure it. And if you're going to need a supplement facts box for your label, you'll likely need to hire a graphic designer to help you format it correctly. It's good to know that there are perfect examples of the labels in our, or the supplement facts boxes in our guide on available online.
Yeah, for sure, Chloe. And that's interesting in terms of just how to lay out this supplement facts box label and the structure of it. And I think this also illustrates the level of nuance it takes to navigate these requirements. And what we're doing here is really trying to do our best to break it all down for those of you who are listening in.
Yeah, and we're almost done with the list of what should be on your labels. So keep hanging with us. And just to orient you for now, we're still on that side or back panel called the information panel. There's a few more things that have to go on that panel. One would be allergen statements. They're required there if allergens are present in your product. You also need to include the name and the street address of the business on the information panel. So having your address available on your website is not going to be a substitute to also putting it on your labels.
All right. Well, I think that just leaves the FDA disclaimer and where to put any of those health-related claims or structure and function claims that a botanical producer might want to make on their products.
Oh, yes. So these two things need to be close together or linked by an asterisk or some other symbol. But they are floaters. They can go anywhere on either panel. For our Dreamy Feels tea, say we want to make the structure function claim on the principal display panel. We want to be able to say there that our tea supports healthy sleep. But we can't fit the FDA disclaimer there too without squishing everything together. This is fine. This isn't a problem. If, after we make the statement that it supports healthy sleep, we put an asterisk or some other symbol, and then on the back, we link that statement to the FDA disclaimer by starting that FDA disclaimer also with an asterisk. It's like using footnotes or endnotes in a book. Now, usually these claims and the disclaimer accompany pretty much all dietary supplements, but they might not. You know, if a producer doesn't want to use a structure function claim, then this disclaimer isn't needed. But how often don't you see these on supplements? They are almost always there.
Yeah, for sure. Like the Yogi Tea products that I can get at my local grocery. And, you know, when I look at those boxes, there's all kinds of health claims on there, such as immunity support and sleep aid, depending on the type of tea it is. But like you said, we cover those structure function claims in depth in the Farmer's Legal Guide to Botanical Products. We also have an associated webinar recording on this topic, in particular labeling, that we'll link both in the show notes and that episode 71. We get all into making health-related claims for botanical products. So make sure to listen, read about these because, yeah, this stuff is heavily regulated.
And to close, I do want to say that what we went over here for the labels is not necessarily an exhaustive list of what you have to put on your dietary supplement labels. We did hit the basic requirements, but there always may be more. So be sure to read the guide to make sure you have all the elements you need. And I also want to leave everyone who's listening with some action steps, some things you can do with regard to labeling. If you're producing and selling botanical products, I would ask you to consider taking some time to possibly make some alterations to your current, or if you're just getting started, proposed botanical product labels. You're going to want them to comply with relevant rules and regulations. So if you could just set aside an hour or two to review the labels that you've designed and compare them with the rules, this exercise may give you the confidence boost you need because you're already including the required information, or you may find needed inspiration and guidance to get your labels into greater compliance. Either way, we're here rooting for you.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Chloe, for walking us through botanical products labeling, and thanks everyone for tuning in. Till next time, bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Farm Commons podcast. For more information on what you just heard, as well as a variety of farm law guides, checklists, flowcharts, and more, visit our website at farmcommons.org. You can also email us at info@farmcommons.org if you have any questions or comments about this podcast or any of our online materials. Thanks everyone for listening and keep on growing. Yeah, that's a wrap.